Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Monday morning health briefs now. Dr. Jeffrey Boomer is emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Dr. Boomer, good morning. Our first caller contest winner was just telling me everything she's doing today. And I said, where do you get all your energy? And she said, well, it comes from my father. So I want to ask you about this story we have today. Researchers making the connection between genetic influences and all sorts of lifestyle factors that can affect an aging brain. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it was a kind of an interesting review they did there. It was came out of this journal called Genomic Psychiatry, and they looked at these groups of folks from Scotland over the last 100 years, from their early childhood all the way through the rest of their lives, and they kind of looked for, you know, why do their brains age better than others? And we all see it, right? We see those folks in their 90s that have a brain sharper than ours when we were 25 years old. And why is that? So they try to shed some light on that. And, you know, I think there was some insights, but I think overall, I think it was, I think we realize that it's genetics and it's nature versus nurture. So there's a little bit of both, probably 50-50. So they looked at some of these folks. They looked at, they did intelligence testing on them when they were around 11, and they found that those that performed highly in those tests, you know, had less likelihood of developing dementia later on in life. So there's obviously something inherent in those folks that sort of was protective. But I think what's really important, what the take home here is the lifestyle habits that seem to contribute to healthier aging, right? So they tested them throughout their lives. They even did MRIs on them later on in their lives. And so the factors that really seemed to make a difference were, you know, things that we talk about all the time. And, you know, when we talk about our longevity and our wellness, right? It's taking care of our general health, you know, making sure our blood pressure and blood sugar and cholesterol all in check, keeping our weight down, eating well, getting good sleep, our habits, you know, avoiding alcohol and smoking and staying active, both physically as well as engaging with social relationships and finding meaning in life. And something else that we don't think about all the time is our sleep and trying to maintain our stress level. So all those things tended to be factors that weighed in on whether or not someone was more likely to develop cognitive decline or dementia later on in their life.
Yeah, and there are definitely connections between sleep issues and cognitive decline. There was a study on this released just the other day. What do we know about that particular connection?
Yeah, I think it's there's been some light shed on this in the past, but I think this came out of the journal Neurology, and they dived in a little bit deeper into what are we talking about here? What is this connection with sleep and cognitive decline? Because I think it's not really well understood, and so they found that there's a connection with this cognitive decline. Specifically, they're talking about what they call this moderate cognitive risk syndrome, or MCR, which really is a pre-dementia condition that's associated with sort of slower motor behaviors or slower walking speeds and memory issues. And I think overall what we're saying here is that it really speaks to the fact that, as we talked about just a minute ago, that our healthy behaviors that contribute to our longevity and well-being can't stop during our waking hours. We really need to give due attention to our sleeping habits, because it really has a significant impact on what goes on with our brain, especially in the long term. So I think what we're seeing is that these folks that suffer from daytime sleepiness reduce enthusiasm, reduced interest in activities, extreme exhaustion throughout the day. Those may be the symptoms that you suffer from a sleep disorder. It's important that you speak to your physician about that and certainly get that checked out, because there are treatment options for the sleep disorders that are out there, such as sleep apnea, and it really can. It's an important part of that overall sort of focus on our well-being and not just, you know, stopping it with our diet and exercise and healthy behaviors, but really focusing on, it's important to focus on our sleep patterns and our sleep and our sleep hygiene as well.
Is 7 hours the magic number that you would recommend to your patients?
Yeah, I would say a minimum 7 hours. I think every patient is different. Every person is different. There are some folks that, claim they can do well with 4 hours of sleep, and you see them live well until their 80s and 90s, and that's the way they've operated their whole lives. But I think in general, I think 7 to 8 hours, somewhere in that time frame, is the magic number. But it's important sometimes that sleep that you're trying to achieve is that deep sleep, that core sleep. Sometimes you're not getting there if you're doing some things not paying attention to some things with your sleep hygiene, such as giving yourself a regular bedtime, alcohol before bed. Certainly, if you're drinking alcohol 3 or 4 hours before you're going to sleep, can significantly impact your ability to sleep. And then setting up an environment that allows you to sleep, reducing noise, reducing light, all those kinds of things are important to giving yourself the opportunity to get the rest that you need.
I like hearing that some people who get only about 4 hours of sleep live well into their 90s. So that's the news I like to hear.
I hope so, Bob. I'm one of them.
We're talking with the emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Jeffrey Bomer. The other day, the FDA announced a proposal to remove an ingredient in many popular over-the-counter decongestants. Was the problem here, doctor, that it didn't work, or is it harmful?
Yeah, this is phenylephrine, so it's been around since the 70s. It's not harmful. That's why it's been around. It's safe. It's over the counter. You'll see it in over the counter medications, like you mentioned, Bob, like Sudafed PE, Mucinex Sinus Max, Vicks DayQuil. So it's been out there for a long time. It gained popularity probably about 20 years ago when Sudafed was forced to go behind the counter because of its being a main ingredient in developing methamphetamine. So it's widely available. It's safe. But as you mentioned, Bob, it may not be all that effective. And so this is sort of interesting. It's sort of a little bit of uncharted territory because the FDA, for the most part, has been around and exists to protect patients, protect those that are taking medications, whether they be prescribed or over the counter. But this is a new action where they're actually taking something off the shelf potentially because of the fact that it just doesn't have the efficacy, it's not very effective in what it's supposed to do. So the criticism here is that you're taking something away for some folks may feel like, hey, these medications work for me and I can get them easily without having to go behind the counter. Mm-hmm. But it's called into question. So they're going to look at it over the next 6 months and I think and kind of get some feedback as to whether or not that this should happen. But CVS has already taken off every medication that has phenylephrine in it. They've taken those off the shelf. So it's one thing that's probably important to note is that phenylephrine is also used in nasal sprays, so that is not being touched here. These are just the oral formulations of phenylephrine that they're talking about pulling off the shelves.
So, what's a good alternative? I imagine there are many choices, aren't there?
Yeah, so I mean, antihistamines in general specifically for allergies. So all of your antihistamines are okay. Sudafedrin is still going to be available. It's proven it. To be effective, but it has an effect on blood pressure, so I think you have to be careful when taking that medication. But Sudafed will be the alternative oral formulation of that. So when you hear about your medications like Zyrtec D, Claritin D, Allegra D, those are all have Sudafedrin in that, so that will still be available.
Got it. Let's talk about what researchers in Sweden have discovered, and I guess this is another reason to have yogurt for breakfast, isn't it?
Yeah, I think yogurt, especially Greek yogurt, is really kind of seeming like it's becoming a superfood, and I think this study gives that a little bit more, more emphasis, I suppose, because it was interesting that the study showed that women, particularly women, it seemed to really be women that were affected by this, both positively and negatively. But they found that women that drank somewhere over 300 milliliters or about 10 ounces of milk a day or more were at higher risk for having coronary artery disease and heart attacks. But if you take that same dairy product and ferment it and make it into yogurt, it had the opposite effect. It had seemed to have a positive influence on them and had seemed to reduce their risk of lowering the risk of heart disease. So probably has something to do with, you know, the probiotics. And I think, you know, I think this is sheds a little bit more light on why these good bacteria, as we call them, that live in our intestinal tracts, these microbiomes are that live symbiotically with us, are really important in maintaining their health. Is probably just as another important factor in maintaining our overall well-being and longevity. So I think it probably has something to do with that. You know, the probiotics and yogurt probably, you know, reduce some of the inflammation in our bodies, can actually help reduce our blood sugars, and it can help improve our cholesterol levels. So I make sure that I would say that, you know, it's important to, if you're eating yogurt, probably to keep it on the, you know, don't eat the really high, you know, the high sugar content yogurts. Plain Greek yogurt, adding a little bit of honey, adding a little bit of fruit to it is probably the way to go to make it a healthy snack.
My takeaway from our chat this morning, Doctor, I'm going to get to bed early, and my dessert after dinner, it'll be Greek yogurt.
There you go. Sounds like a plan.
I will talk to you again next time, and in the meantime, thanks as always. Appreciate your counsel this morning, as always.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.